I see a future where everyone makes health a daily practice, and they would support that, you know, with insights and advice. You know, think of the doctor in your pocket who's looking out for you, maybe, you know, giving you a little nudge here and there.
What's going on, everyone? Emily Abadi here. You are listening to episode 294 of Hurdle, a wellness-focused podcast where I talk to inspirational people about everything from their highest highs and toughest moments to essential tips on how to live a healthier, happier, more motivated life. We all go through our fair share of hurdles. My goal through these discussions is to empower you to better navigate yours and move with intention so that you can stride toward your own big potential. And of course, have some fun along the way. For today's conversation, I'm really amped to be bringing you my chat with Tom Hale. He's the CEO of Aura. I cannot even do this justice. How many messages I get on the regular talking about wearables, asking me, what's the deal with the ring that you're wearing? Why did you make the switch from Whoop? What is it that you're looking to collect from wearing this thing? What data do you find helpful? Do you find that it impacts your sleep? I could go on forever. The lowdown on my relationship with wearables is that I've probably been wearing some sort of a wearable since wearables became a thing. In my many lives as a multi-hyphenate, especially as an editor in the health and wellness space, I was constantly trying the newest and greatest. So whether that be the original Nike Fuel Band, I had a custom rose gold one, to Garmin's and the Apple Watch, every iteration, to a Whoop that I wore consistently for about 3 or 4 years. And now I'm regularly wearing an Aura ring every day. And I wear an Apple Watch during my days as well as a Garmin to run. I've tried Coros. I mean, the list goes on. And that's why I was so amped to sit down with Tom. Not only is his story really interesting, what he was doing and dealing with before he became the CEO of this massive technology company, but also his insights into the category are unrivaled. It reminds me, understandably so, of the conversation I had with Will Ahmed many years ago, who is the founder of Whoop. There's so much useful information in this episode, what can be helpful versus hurtful when it comes to wearables. I appreciate that he does talk about it pretty democratically, and that, of course, he wants people to get in on the Aura game. He wants people to wear Aura, but he talks about how wearables can impact your life, period. We also talk about the significance of wearing something on your finger versus perhaps on your wrist or somewhere else on your body, and dive into what we can expect from the category moving forward. I cannot believe this, but there's likely a day that many people will have something implanted in their body, which is absolutely wild. Nevertheless, I loved this conversation. I'm so happy that it now has a space living here in the feed, and I hope that you love it too. Make sure you're following along with Hurdle over on social. It's at Hurdle Podcast. I am over at Emily Abadi, and I'm asking you a favor in this week's installment of the Weekly Hurdle newsletter. You know, it comes out every single Friday morning. So much of the same stuff you love about the show directly in your inbox. And I would love for you to not only make sure you're subscribed, it's absolutely free. The link to do that is in the show notes, but head over there to the Substack and leave your thoughts, answer the questions I'm asking, would help me so, so much. That's it for now. With that, let's get to it. Let's get to hurdling. Today, I'm sitting down with Tom Hale. He's the CEO of Aura. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Emily. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks so much for making the time. You're a busy man, one that's hard to track down, but one that I've been looking forward to sitting down with for some time now.
I'm excited to be here, ready to answer all your questions.
All of the questions. Well, before we jump headfirst into a sea of questions when it comes to wearables, I feel like this is a topic that has been many messages about in my DMs and in my inbox for some time now. But before we do that, I do want to hear a little bit about you, Tom. You haven't been with the company for super long. So give us some insight into your journey and what attracted you to joining the team over at Aura.
You know, it's a great question. So just, I have been with the company now just about 2 years. And in fact, in about 13 days, it'll be 2 years to the calendar date. So it's been 2 years. Maybe that doesn't seem like a long time, but for me, it seems like a lot has happened in that time. How I got to the company is an interesting story. It's a little bit my hurdle moment, actually. I know you like to talk about hurdle moments, so maybe I'll just jump in there. Fall of 2021 was a challenging fall. We had just sold a company, and it was in the process of being unsold, which is painful. My family was going through some stress, you know, the kids post-COVID and being, just under a lot of pressure. I started losing sleep. And frankly, I have been a championship sleeper my entire life. I mean, like probably world class in terms of my ability to fall asleep and stay asleep. But during this period, I really started losing sleep. I would wake up and couldn't fall back to sleep. I had a hard time getting to sleep. And I started researching because the kind of person I am, I want to find, you know, everything I can about a given subject and to do what I can about it. And I bumped into Aura. And I started, you know, kind of learning. I hadn't really studied sleep. And I think this is common for a lot of people. They, you know, sleep is just this thing you do. No one gives you a manual on how to sleep. No one teaches you, you know, your mom doesn't teach you how to sleep. Your school teacher doesn't teach you how to sleep. So I didn't really know very much about it. And I learned a ton. And I made some quick changes in my personal sleep hygiene, sort of things that you might expect to be pretty obvious, like don't drink much coffee, or don't drink alcohol before you go to bed, or sleep in a cold room, or don't stare at screens up until bedtime, and don't watch Netflix until 1 a.m. All these things really, you know, kind of added up to changing my sleep patterns. And let me tell you what, it was a game changer for me. It really improved my mood and my energy and my health and how I felt and my resilience to stress. And all of these things were you know, an incredible experience. It was like, I call it walking out of a black and white TV show from the 60s into full color 4K, you know, broadcast streaming. It was amazing. And so I, at the time, was convinced that I had to be involved in this company somehow. And, you know, they were doing a CEO search. I suggested to them that they should consider me. And they graciously accepted my offer, but then said, you're not exactly what we're looking for. I said, but I am. I'm a software person by training and someone who is passionate about the space, and I've owned every wearable there is. They said, yeah, maybe you're right. And I ended up getting the job and starting, I think it was, you know, early April 2022.
I'm curious what made you decide to lean into Aura, considering the scope of the market from the get-go?
You know, it's a really interesting question. I think wearables are, I think, a really powerful technology. And we're still at the beginning of wearables. You know, I think people mostly think of wearables as fitness trackers. But the reality is, I think wearables have the opportunity to tell you all sorts of things about your health, to keep you healthy, to change your behavior, to give you information. We call it giving your body a voice. I just think we're at the beginning of this journey. So that was one thing that really was appealing to me. Obviously, I love the product. That's another reason why I was drawn to it. But then if you think about the product itself, and I see you have one on, so I know you know a little bit about what I'm talking about. It's a real shift in your perspective to think about how you're going to meet every day with your body. And I think for some people, it comes naturally, whether you're an athlete or somebody who's, you know, always been involved in your health and wellness. Maybe you do this naturally. But what you start to notice is not what everybody notices, which is like, wow, I drank a lot last night and I feel terrible today, or I'm sick. But what you start to notice is some of those changes on the margins and the changes that might affect how you approach a day or how you might approach someone else, given how they're feeling. And it's kind of this, like, we call it a sixth sense almost. You get a sixth sense for what your body is really capable of and how your physiology is reacting to all the things that you have to react to. And honestly, it's really eye-opening to see what's possible. So for me, the experience was, wow, it's a great product. It's really interesting. I haven't seen anybody, you know, do this with a form factor like a ring. It's not another digital mouth to feed. It's not asking you to do things. It's just passively monitoring you in the background and making sure that you have the information you need to make the best decisions about your health and wellness. And quite fundamentally, you know, the software experience was off the charts. So all of these things added up to like, wow, I'm really interested in this company.
Yeah. You know, candidly, I'm sure I'll talk about my experience with wearables in the intro, so I won't go too much into it now with you, but I have tried so many things by the nature of my job and of reviewing items for different editorial outlets. And for years, from 2019 to probably 2022, maybe, I wore a Whoop strap and I loved it. I loved being able to get the data. I loved all the information, but what it ended up coming down to for me, and the reason that I switched, was I was tired of, in the summer, having inconsistencies with my data because I would take off the Whoop strap because I didn't want a tan line. And then some days I would forget to put it on. Some days I would forget where I put it all together, etc. And so I said one day, you know what? I think I'm finally going to try the Oura Ring and see how it feels on my finger. And I haven't gone back since.
Yeah, I think the comfort and the you know, kind of ease and frictionless kind of approach to just having a ring. I mean, you know, people who wear jewelry, they don't take their rings off. I mean, maybe they do every now and then, but by and large, you wear it all the time. And I think that really does help. It adds to your point, to continuous data collection, so that you start to see deviations from your baseline. And that's really what Oura is telling you. Like, something's either off or, wow, you're doing great today.
Yeah, or wow, you're doing great today, which is the goal most days, right? But clearly, the reason why we're wearing this is to learn all of the different things that we can do that are within our control so that you wake up regularly feeling like you're doing good today. So tell me, before we dive into kind of the science and particulars of wearables, how was it for you when you got started at Oura? Because as you mentioned, it was very different than what you were doing previously.
That's right. Yeah. So it was a huge learning curve. And I love learning curves, actually. It's probably when I'm most engaged in you know, being a human being, when your brain is really turned on. And there was lots to learn about. There was science or physiology or physics or, you know, the notions of how to run a hardware business. And frankly, the good news and the bad news is I was incredibly energized. And I was also, I think my readiness score probably dropped about 20 points in my HRV point about 10 seconds, you know, for the first 6 months there as we were, you know, kind of navigating some interesting times. I think if you remember, right around when I joined was the Ukraine war and the stock market kind of went a little sideways. And throughout it all, actually, Oura has been an incredibly strong business and has been growing like a weed. I don't know if this is your perception. I certainly, you know, can see the numbers from inside the business to see how successful the product has been. But just experientially, I don't know about you, but I, you know, I go to like an airport or a bar, and I guarantee you, within 10 feet of me, is someone wearing an Oura ring.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it is. I think, and it wasn't that way. I think, you know, 2 years ago, I think it's really picked up steam, you know, for a variety of reasons. But I think to what you highlighted, which is like the comfort of the form factor, the ease, the quality of the data, the continuous data, the insights that are provided, the overall experience for us, just it's great. I got to hand it to the team; they've done a fantastic job.
Yeah. So from the get-go, one of the most difficult things for you was a little bit of a learning curve, although you did enjoy it. And then also trying to make time for everything, probably to do all of that learning and also to accommodate for the things that your body actually needed, that the device that you were onboarding was telling you that you were struggling with. What do you do in those situations? What gives in a situation where life is feeling really heavy? What do you change or mix up first?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's different for everybody. For me, I think sleep was this amazing unlock. I will say that. I had kids in my 30s, had high pressure jobs, and then, you know, a career, and the demands on your time from those things are significant. And so, if you're gonna, you know, whatever, keep up with your shows, you probably end up watching your show at 11 p.m. before you go to bed. I really had to be clear that I think I had been sleep deprived, and changing that, the impact of that was really profound. And in fact, it made me committed through the period of onboarding at Oura. It made me committed to protecting that, and, you know, to try to get to bed at the, you know, the earliest hour I thought I could reasonably do it. And to prioritize sleep over other things. You know, I probably am not as caught up on all my Netflix shows as I would like to be. I'm more committed to it, and to be intentional about how I approached sleep. Now, the flip side of that, of course, too, is you know, sleep is like a wonderful drug. It affects all these parts of your physiology. It affects your mood. It affects your energy. It affects your appetite. You know, it helps you regulate your appetite. But it also, I think, gives you energy, which I think in turn enables you to be active. And so that's the other thing that I made a really conscious effort to protect, even though I don't always succeed, but to protect activity and protect movement. Whether that's like walking to work in the mornings, making that part of my regular routine, or, you know, making sure I have two or three pretty good cardio and weight workouts a week. Mostly because I think, one, it's really positive for my health, but also it's great for stress management. I think lots of people know this, that exercise is a wonderful way to manage stress and kind of work out those stresses on you. So those are the two things that I really focused on. More recently, I've been very focused on diet and nutrition. I'm wearing a CGM and have worn a CGM for quite some time, mostly to sort of understand, you know, how my body reacts to certain foods and to make choices that are really intentional about what I eat and not only what I eat, but how much I eat.
I definitely want to circle back on this conversation of nutrition and maybe learn a little bit, if you're open to it, about what you've learned from those tweaks and what you're seeing within your data. But before we do that, I think now is a good time to start with the basic question, why wear a wearable at all?
Why should you wear a wearable? I think pretty much it's really important for folks to understand that a wearable is not just a fitness tracker. And I would argue that you should wear an Oura Ring. But I think the reality is that if you wear any kind of wearable, you're starting to be more aware of your physiology. More movement, more exercise, that is going to be better for you. I think that's a powerful thing. You should move every day. You do that, you will be healthier. You will live longer. But I think there's a future here. And that future is that everybody on the planet who has a smartphone already, right, they already have a really powerful computing device, should have sensors on their body that are as non-intrusive and as comfortable and kind of woven into the fabric of their daily life as much as possible, that's collecting data and referring that data to this device. And then that can function kind of like a little bit your guardian angel, a little bit your accountability buddy. But, you know, think of it as like the doctor who, instead of seeing your doctor once a year, you've got this person who's looking out for your health every day. And not just, you know, making a comparison of what you should do and trying to give you some genericized advice that may or may not be right for you based on your age, your health condition, you know, what kind of athlete or not athlete you are, or how what you're doing in your life, and whether or not you have a chronic illness. Understanding all those things and providing you insight and guidance. I just think that's a really compelling vision. Now,
totally.
Many people come to it saying, I just want an activity tracker. And then they learn, particularly with Oura, that there's much more going on than just tracking activity. You know, we talked a lot about sleep already. Understanding how you can use sleep, it's like a superpower. You know, I think some of the most effective people on the planet have figured out that sleep is an incredible advantage for them in terms of cognition, in terms of energy, in terms of mood, in terms of their impact on the world. I think there's other factors as well. I think there's the factor of, you know, how do you want to live your life? Do you want to live a long, healthy life? And I think having a wearable that's like showing you that some of your behaviors are conducive to living a long, healthy life and some are not. One of the classic ones, we hear this a lot, I'm sure you've heard this too. What's the thing that most often happens after wearing an Oura Ring? People drink less. And the reason why is because they can see the impact of alcohol, which effectively metabolizes into a poison in your body. They can see the impact on them. Now, of course, we all know about hangovers, but like, think about it. A glass of wine can really, you know, gum up your REM sleep, and that can affect your cognition in a big way. And so it's a really powerful kind of insight, I think, for people to understand what are all the ways that a wearable can help.
Two immediate follow-up questions. The first is about something I wrote on for GQ, I believe it was last year or the year before, and that is what we coined to be the nocebo effect, in that you have a wearable, you wake up in the morning, and it tells you maybe what you may or may not already know, that you didn't have a good night of sleep. You wake up, you're like, well, today's a wash. Like, today is just garbage. I'm not going to try. Talk to me about the school of thought then, right? Because for so many people, that's why they might not even be interested in wearing a wearable at all, because maybe you do wake up and you feel okay, but your wearable is telling you that you're garbage. So then what happens?
You know, I think we all have the moments where we wonder how we're going to get through the day based on how we feel.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the metrics that are coming to you through your wearable are, you know, they're measured metrics. They're, you know, they're telling you something, whether or not you want to hear it or whether or not you want to act on it, that's really up to you. But, you know, I think on the whole, the upsides of knowing where you sit and the times that I think Aura is most compelling is when it gets it right. And you're like, God, you know, I have been dragging and I'm not sure why. And let me see if I can change a behavior that makes me do that. Or, man, I really am stressed and I really ought to, you know, do something about that to relieve that stress, whether it's a breathing exercise or to take a minute, you know, walk around outside. It's these sort of small interventions that I think are so critical to addressing the pressures of daily life that are building up around you. Now, on a day that you get a piece of feedback that says, hey, you know what, maybe today's a day for taking it easy, I think the benefit of that is not that you blow off all of your activities or forget to do something or decide not to do something. It's that you're allowing yourself a little bit of grace. And in a funny way, I actually think this is what Aura does maybe uniquely. Where other wearables might be saying, you know, come on, get off the couch, you know, get your steps in, let's go. You know, they're kind of pushing for you to push it and always be pushing, which, by the way, perfectly acceptable. But for most people who are not trying to train for a marathon or maybe are not, you know, super athletes, honestly, like getting through the day is workout enough. And so if you can give yourself some grace as you navigate your life, like I actually think that's a really, really powerful and valuable thing. And it's a subtle thing and you don't experience it until you have one and you start to realize that this is what it's telling you, that like maybe today's a day, you know, to not try and to go for it. And then you realize, yeah, this thing really understands how I feel. And it's in fact telling me something that I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, what's your take? Do you have a view on how people should be using wearables this way?
Not necessarily. I think for me, when it comes to the days where you otherwise would feel fine, but your wearable is telling you that something's off, I do agree with you that that's an opportunity rather than something that should be interpreted as, well, the rest of the day is trash, right?
Right.
So if we then take ownership over our opportunity to interpret the data and in addition, think about what happened the day before, then that is where we can really do something positive for ourselves. And that also involves accountability and interactivity on the user side, right? Because if you're not keeping track of the different habits, or as you were speaking about how you're really dialing in now on your diet, if you're not remembering or keeping track or logging it within the app, what's going on, then you're just going to have data that's not necessarily serving you, maybe. So it's up to you to work with the wearable if you want to learn more about yourself so that you can do something with that information going forward.
I think that's spot on. And I think this idea that somehow you have to do what your wearable says, I think that's kind of, you know, kind of misses the mark. I do think there is just so much value in being able to see the impact of discrete behaviors or habits, and then to recognize that those things are within your control. I mean, look at it this way. Of the things that might kill you over the course of your life that are health related, something like 60% of those factors, and maybe 60% of the fatalities that are a result, they are behavioral in nature. You know, it's the degree to which you sleep. It's the degree to which you have a healthy diet. It's a degree to which you, you know, keep your body moving and keep your physical health. It's a little bit your emotional wellness and your kind of, you know, ability to find balance in your life. It's the social connection and community. These are all the factors that like drive wellness and maybe even ultimately drive your health, that if you don't pay attention to, well, what are the results? Heart attack, diabetes. You know, those two things are the top two killers in the world, and they are very much linked to behavior. Certainly, there's genetic factors as well. But like of the things that are really going to affect your health, behavior is just so powerful. And if you can learn how to modify your behavior, and if something helps you do that, then you should absolutely take advantage of it.
Yeah, I hear you. So then the follow-up question, the second thing here is, what keeps someone wearing a wearable if they feel as though they've learned what they need to learn from it? Why do we stick with wearing wearables when we've had the experience, okay, I know if I drink X amount, I'm not going to recover well. Or I know that if I eat too close to bed, this is what's going to happen for me. So why keep wearing a wearable at all?
So I think this is a really interesting question, particularly for Aura, because the thing that is most surprising to me about Aura is how good the retention is as a metric relative to what we understand to be the retention of other wearables. You know, famously, if you look at the Fitbit S1, you know, something like a third of the, you know, Fitbits that people are wearing were still in, you know, being used 12 months later. I think what is most compelling for me is to have people understand that their health status and the behaviors that are healthy for them, it's not static. And to understand that while there are some generalized things that help everybody, their life and their life circumstances and their genotype and their epigenome and all the things that inform their physiology are uniquely theirs. And so there's somewhat of a unlimited surface of learning to be had. Because as you go through life, your life condition changes. Actually, it's interesting. Today, we just introduced a new capability, which is it's called Pregnancy Insights. So it's live in the app now. And what it basically does is if you tag pregnancy or you tell the app that you're pregnant, it asks you when your due date is, and it starts kind of a clock of your pregnancy. And it gives you guidance as you move through each stage of your pregnancy, you know, sometimes on a daily or weekly basis. Say, this is what you should be expecting. You know, your HRV actually probably will improve during the first trimester. And oh, by the way, like you're going to be sleeping less and your temperature is going to go a little bit haywire here. Like being able to set that context for someone, that's a very discrete journey. And it's very different from all the time beforehand. You know how I know this? Because for a long time, before we introduced this feature, one of the most consistent pieces of feedback was, hey, when I get pregnant, I just, my data goes haywire and it's not meaningful to me anymore. Because I don't, you know, my data's gone crazy, but normally my readiness is high. Now it's tanked. What is this? What's going on? How am I supposed to be listening to my body during pregnancy? Because it doesn't make sense. So what's really interesting is I think about why you should wear a wearable and why you should keep wearing a wearable is that, you know, you have these sort of daily cycles we just talked about. You know, you sleep well, you feel good. What did you do during the day? How are you going to, you know, how are you meeting your activity goals? Are you feeling healthy? What's your mood? What's your stress level? All these things are sort of your daily activities. But you might also go through a real transition. For women, it's obvious. You're in your 20s, you turn into your 30s, maybe you're trying to conceive. That's a major change. Women come off of, you know, many women, you know, who have been taking hormonal birth control, they come off birth control in their 30s. And like their bodies are changing. Maybe towards the end of the 30s, early 40s, they get into perimenopause. All sorts of things are changing. Then in, you know, maybe in, you know, your late 40s or so, maybe you go into menopause and then, you know, your body has changed and your sleep goes crazy and your temperature regulation is crazy. And giving your body a voice through that entire arc, like that's a reason to wear a wearable. Because you're getting the benefit of like, how did each day go? And should I be healthy? And what should I do today? What did I do yesterday? That's really powerful. And by the way, sleep is great because guess what? Everyone does it. Every night, you know, it's like not everyone goes to the gym every day. I don't know about you, but like, you know, people don't manage to make it to the gym every day, but they do sleep. And so that kind of frequency of usage is so powerful. And then you couple that to the long-term benefits of different health journeys. Maybe you get sick. I'll tell you, this is a great story. We have a lot of people who wear Aura who are managing a chronic illness. And I think some of that is because we're good at monitoring your health, but also because I think the tone of Aura, which is very supportive, you know, it suits well for somebody who's managing a chronic. We have a lot of those customers. And when you're immunocompromised, things like your heart rate variability, your heart rate, your temperature, your respiration are really, really important biometrics. Why? Because if you're immunocompromised, even a minor infection is a really big problem. Most people, you know, whatever, oh, I have a little cold, I got a headache, I feel a little bit bad, I have a 24-hour flu, and they play through. But if you've got a chronic disease, a small perturbation in your health is a big deal. And so I think, again, going back to like this, the power of what your health journey is, which is not static. You're not healthy, you know, all the time. And you know, you're going to go through some stages in your life. You need to know what's happening so that you can better manage it. And by the way, the people around you can better manage it. We hear this all the time. People who are going through like a course of chemotherapy or recovering from surgery, having their partner, spouse, friend, whatever, be aware of their physiology, aware of their readiness, aware how they're doing, and then say, hey, listen, you know what? I'm going to give you some grace today. I'm going to come home early from work and make you dinner. I'm going to pick up the kids from school, whatever it is, that kind of situational awareness about someone else's health. I'm telling you, I think that's a game changer. I mean, maybe you have a really great partner who's super sensitive and aware of your needs, but probably not. And by the way, if that person can do it in a really like low effort way without having to like, you know, interrogate you or monitor your every move and understand how you're feeling, wow, that's a powerful, powerful tool.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. I remember during the height of the pandemic, having a wearable, there would be moments where I would be really concerned about my health because of a reading that, unbeknownst to me, like nothing else would have been wrong with me. But all of a sudden I had maybe a ridiculously low HRV, which stands for heart rate variability, or I was just trying to figure out what was going on with my body. And there were several times that these readings were significant or the tip off to something happening that I wasn't aware of yet. And so I would say that that's probably when we're talking about it being something that ebbs and flows with you and that your body is constantly changing, there's always going to be helpful data or helpful things that you can take from a wearable device. The question is what is it that you want to do with that information? And for some, do you want to take the ignorance is bliss approach, or do you want to actually take ownership of your health moving forward?
You know, I think reality is that young people take their health for granted. And, you know, they can stay out all night drinking and go to work the next day and feel great. I think that is one of the great, you know, advantages of youth. And you have your first health crisis, whatever form it takes. And you suddenly realize that, like, you are not invulnerable. And that, in fact, that there are all sorts of things about your health that are fragile and precious, and you want to preserve them. And people change their behavior. What COVID did was put everybody on the planet on notice that their health was fragile. And in fact, that even something as casual as going to a store and trying to pick up some toilet paper, even though we all know it's probably not going to kill you, is a potential vector for you to have a health crisis. And I think that, honestly, I think you calling out COVID is exactly right. Aura was sort of made famous on the back of a study of 70,000 people, Aura ring wearers, who recorded and reported whether or not they got COVID or not. And this is a peer-reviewed scientific paper. You can Google it in a second. It's called the TempPredict study. And what it showed was that your biometrics showed, on average, 2.75 days before you had confirmed symptoms or a confirmed diagnosis of COVID, that you were starting to get sick. Which means that for 2.75 days, you were exposing other people around you because you had no idea that you were sick. That's incredibly powerful. And so, you know, we the NBA kind of ended up using COVID for the bubble, and it, you know, became sort of a PR thing. But Aura as a product, you know, that's related to kind of keeping you healthy during a pandemic, boy, that was, you know, it's a health crisis for the world, but a great opportunity for Aura.
Taking a break from today's episode to give some love to my sponsors. First up, my friends at Hyperice. Spring into action with the most advanced warm-up and recovery technology, including Hypervolt Percussion Massage, Normatec Air Compression Technology, and Venom Heat and Massage Wearables. Let me tell you, Hyperice has been such a game changer for me during the last month especially, but really always. Having these recovery tools at my disposal at home and on the road is
epic. I was wearing both the Normatec Go sleeves and the Venom Go heat patches on the plane to and from Tokyo, and I was so much better for it. It helps that this technology is super portable, giving my body exactly what it needs no matter where I am. Also, let's be real, the cost of massages adds up. So the fact that I'm able to use my Hypervolt at home to get that lower back area, which is always screaming at me, plus my legs before and after any sort of activity or just a long day, yeah, my wallet is thankful. Of course, Hyperice has a deal for all of you. You can get 15% off the entire product suite on hyperice.com. That's HYPERICE.com using code HURDLE15 at checkout. That is an awesome deal. Again, use HURDLE15 at checkout at hyperice.com to snag 15% off your order today. Also got to give some love to my friends at Element. Element's a science-backed electrolyte drink mix with everything you need and nothing you don't. In terms of formulation ingredients, Element keeps it simple, giving the perfect ratio of electrolytes while cutting out sugar and fillers, gluten, or other dodgy ingredients. I personally love recharging with a serving of their watermelon salt flavor, and it's my go-to along with my AG1 first thing in the morning. Now, with that said, they also have a slew of other amazing flavors ranging from citrus and raspberry to orange and chocolate, which makes the most divine hot chocolate if you combine it with some hot water and a splash of almond milk. Good news is that you can try all of the flavors with this special offer for Hurdle listeners. Head on over to drinkelement.com. That's drinkelement.com/hurdle and get a free Element sample pack with your purchase. Again, that is drinkelement.com, drinkelement.com/hurdle to get a free sample pack with your purchase today and try all of the delicious flavors.
Obviously, so many of the other wearables worn predominantly on the wrist. What is your stance, feedback, thoughts on the placement of the device and how it impacts data?
Well, it's a critical point because if you think about the metrics that we're measuring and the kind of granularity and accuracy with which we hold ourselves to, particularly if we're looking for subtle deviations as soon as possible. And one of the first things to recognize is that it learns you. It learns your body and your metrics. And that way, it ends up understanding what your baseline is. And then based on that baseline, it will be able to see deviations in temperature, deviations in heart rate variability, deviations in resting heart rate, and be able to give you insights as a result of those deviations, personalized to you. And I think one of the things that's most compelling about Aura is that it doesn't feel like after 2 months, you've heard everything the app has to say to you. You know, I'm still surprised by things that surface, you know, based on the app's measurement. So, okay, it learns your baseline. That is maybe such an important and powerful way to understand the basics of Aura. But to do that accurately and to do that with, you know, kind of the rigor and quality of data to allow those insights to be meaningful and accurate, you need to be collecting data at the highest accuracy. Collecting data from the finger with these kinds of technologies, polyplethysmography, is by definition 50 to 100 times more accurate than collecting on the wrist. Why? Okay. When your heart pumps, your blood shoots down your arm and goes right underneath your index finger. And there's an artery there. It's called the palmar artery. And it passes right underneath the sensors, maybe 2 to 3 millimeters away from the sensors on the ring. And it's on the leading edge of your pulse, not the trailing edge. So it's arterial flow, not capillary flow or venal flow heading back to the heart. And if you think about it, the tissue that you're measuring through is uniform. It's skin and a little bit of fat. Contrast that to the wrist. On the wrist, it's capillary flow. There's lots of tissue around here. There's bone, there's sinew, there's hair, there's discoloration from sun because your hands are always exposed to the sun, whereas the palms are not. Many of these technologies depend on the absorption of light to make a determination about what the signal that your body is sending. That's the data that they're using, is how your blood flow or your body is absorbing the light that is shining into your body. That difference in location ends up driving a big, big delta in accuracy. And just to put a fine point on, when you go to the hospital, where do they clamp a pulse ox sensor and the pulse sensor? On the end of your finger. And the reason is for exactly the same reason. Uniform tissue, arterial blood flow, proximity to the sensor. And I think that's a really kind of a key point about rings, which is honestly, I think we've always known this and believed it. And it's been really exciting to have science and medicine validate that. If we were to run down the list of all the third-party studies, scientific reviews, customers who've done tests, like Aura and measuring from the finger is an incredibly accurate device. In fact, it's arguably why doctors and researchers many times will use Aura when they're trying to get a really, really accurate reading on something like heart rate or heart rate variability.
Tom, it is wild to think about how much you have learned over the last 2 years of being the CEO of this company.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like, there's so much information in my head. I can't wait to get it all out. But it is amazing to me to think about this sort of intersection of physiology, physics, and technology. And it's such a rich and interesting problem, I think, for us all. I mean, everybody in the industry, I tip my hat to them, because there's so much stuff that we don't yet even know. Like, we've got data on people that is 7 years of continuous heart rate data. So call that billions and billions of heartbeats, whatever it is. I think we've tracked 10 billion hours of continuous human behavior. Okay, what are the data and insights that are locked away in that huge data asset? We've barely begun to scratch at the surface. And I think we're going to be learning things about the long-term impacts of behavior and environment on our health, for years to come.
Yeah. Super interesting. Super interesting. This conversation kind of reminds me a little bit of the conversation that I had with Ali Aradi from Tonal. Both of you just so accomplished in your own ways and clearly working at the forefront of health and technology. One of the questions that I asked him that I want to bring here to the table is, who is it that motivates you? So where do you garner your inspiration from, being someone that's at the forefront, leading a massive company? I think the last time I heard you cite the amount of employees, it's close to the 500 person range. Is that correct?
Yep. We're getting
to be good. Where do you garner your inspiration from so that you can show up as a leader?
I will tell you something. I find the employee base at Aura to be incredibly inspirational. And I think partially because everybody at Aura has a really strong sense of mission. They believe in what they're doing. They see their role in the world. The way they're going to make a dent in the universe is to improve the world's health and to help people foster healthy habits that are going to improve health outcomes for them over the course of their life. They are motivated and driven by this. They are scientists. They are PhDs. They're doctors. They're technologists. They're marketing people. They all have this same shared purpose and shared vision. And I honestly feel like every day when I jump out of bed and rush off to begin work, the energy that I get from the group of people, I think, is really profound. So that's one. I think there's lots of people, honestly, who should inspire us. I think somebody like Yvonne Chouinard, who is the founder of Patagonia and tried to strike a balance between doing good for a company and doing good for the world. And to use his company as a force for positive change in the world. People like Mark Benioff, he is famously a fan of having companies donate 1% of their revenue to charity just to improve the world that we live in. We all have to work together to make the world a wonderful place. It doesn't just happen. I think about people like I had Serena Williams on the board of a previous company. Boy, you want to talk about somebody who knows how to win. She is a force of nature. And some of that is just about learning and being inspired by the grit, tenacity of someone. I'm every day inspired by people like that. Gosh, who else? I'll tell you, I was just reading this today. Mary Barra, she is the first female Big Three automaker CEO. She's been in cars for a long time, but she was the one who, during COVID, made the decision for GM to convert a bunch of its production lines over to making ventilators. And she's just a really powerful kind of leader who thinks, you know, bigger than just like, how do you drive performance in a company? She thinks, how do you make an impact on the world? And maybe that's what I find most inspiring about Aura.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting, the depth, the breadth of the individuals that you just mentioned, the opportunity that we have to draw inspiration from everyone, everything around us, if we so choose to do so. Another question that I love to ask people who are in positions like yours is for a book recommendation. I'm sure you've read many of personal betterment, personal development, self-help kind of books, but whether it's in that category or not, what's on the top of your must recommend list?
Well, let's see. I think the first book that I would recommend was one that I read right at the beginning of Aura, which is called, you know, The Patient Will See You Now. And it was about this kind of paradigm shift of people taking agency and control over their own health journeys and educating themselves using the internet and the breakdown of the medical industrial complex from being kind of an ivory tower where this information was not accessible and you needed to, you know, get a specialist to tell you something. People are well informed now. And you add that to kind of the power of wearables to give you some insight about your actual, you know, biometrics and your health status and all the ways that people can track and improve that. I think it's a game changer. So I think that book really had a big, profound impact on me. And then because you asked, I'm reading a book. I'm actually rereading this book, and it's called How Democracies Die. And it's a little bit of a study of totalitarian regimes throughout history and a little bit, how did they get there? I think it's important for us today in this current world that we live in to really be thoughtful about the role that being a citizen and having a civic concern, you know, plays. And I just think, you know, it's a great read. I would recommend it to anybody.
Have you always enjoyed learning?
Gosh, I think so. I think somehow, I don't know, I got the bug early on. And I guess I was always pretty much a bookish kid. And so books, you know, were the place where information resided before the internet kids. I don't know if you managed to clock that, but, you know, we didn't have the internet. Information wasn't served up to us on a platter. And so I think, yeah, just the process of learning is just so, I don't know, I find it really energizing.
And did you always learn well? I'm basically telling you that it's clear that you learn well because of how much information you have absorbed over the last 2 years. So I'm just curious if this has always been a skill that you've...
I don't know if it's well or better than anybody else or worse than anybody else. I just know that for me, you know, and maybe this has to do with time. I just, you know, I put in a lot of time reading stuff and trying to absorb information, and that's probably helped.
I think that that's actually a really good point, right? Because so many times we want to have the answers or the information, but a lot of individuals won't seek to put in the time to get to where it is that they want to be. And in order to do that, you need to have a really strong why. So in this case, anyway, when we're talking about now you being 2 years in almost to the date of when you started this role with Aura, your strong why was to be at the front of this company and understand the mark that it can make. And so in order to do that, you needed to put in the work to do the learning.
100%. And the thing is that it's not a static process. You know, every day you have a lot of agency in how you spend your time and what you do with it. So maybe the free advice I'd offer to everyone is use that time wisely.
Yeah, for sure. Now, of course, I'm not going to let you escape without circling back to that conversation we were having at the beginning about you dialing in a little bit more on your nutrition. I'm curious not only what that looks like, but what you've learned in that process thus far because of feedback from your Aura ring.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing was, and I learned this actually early on, is that sleep is a really powerful regulator of these two hormones. And they're, you know, many times they're referred to as the hunger and the satiety hormone. Leptin and ghrelin are the names of the hormone. And it turns out that, you know, leptin is the one that kind of helps you feel full, and ghrelin is the one that makes you feel hungry. And they're intimately tied with sleep. So for example, when you are not going to bed at the right time, and there's a chemical that builds up in your body that basically, when it reaches a certain amount, it's like you're going to sleep no matter what. It's basically, it rises throughout the day, and at a certain point, you know, melatonin gets kicked off in your body. And this chemical really is what causes you to go to sleep. If you press past that, your body makes you hungry. And so this whole phenomenon of the late night snack is a thing. And it's a thing that's driven by, you know, your biology telling you that if you're not going to get rest, you had better feed this body. And you know, think about it as an evolutionary thing, which is like, how did you survive when you were stressed or not getting, you know, sleep? You survived by making sure you had food. So this idea of the late night snack was a really interesting one because I am, you know, not only a great sleeper, but I'm a great lead time snacker. And I can actually regulate my appetite a little bit better just by sleeping better. And the thing is, like, it wasn't like I intended to do that. I learned about it and I was working on my sleep. And then I realized I wasn't snacking and I didn't have the urge to snack. And when I finished my dinner, I felt satisfied. I didn't have like another, you know, desire to kick on something. So that was sort of the first thing. And, you know, so improving my sleep improved my regulation and my appetite. The second thing was, you know, I started to think a lot about sugar. and I started thinking about sugar primarily through the genesis of alcohol, which, you know, sugar is one of the byproducts of alcohol. And alcohol messes with a lot of your physiology. The REM sleep being affected by alcohol is a well-documented and well-known fact. So I started getting interested in how do I get higher quality deep, and, you know, not drinking alcohol turned out to be a really effective way to do that. So I really stopped that. And then I stopped drinking coffee and I didn't have the urge to drink alcohol to, you know, modulate the feelings of being amped that I had from drinking the coffee. And thinking about sugar, what I noticed is that I actually slept better as well when I didn't eat a sugary dessert. And I had been moving my meal times a little bit earlier in an attempt to kind of, you know, as you say, get the digestion underway and the stress that puts on your body done before you get in bed, so your body can really work on being, you know, recovery on when you're asleep. So this idea that I should start looking at sugar, you know, came forward. And someone said, hey, well, if you try the CGM, you can see exactly what the impact on your body is from the foods that you eat in terms of sugar in your blood. I was like, oh, that's really interesting. So you take this device and it's like a little disc, maybe about a couple millimeters thick and a little bit round, and you kind of chunk it, you know, it sort of gets into your body and puts a little tiny filament. You know, it doesn't really hurt. Honestly, I was a little anxious at first, but it didn't really hurt, and, you know, kind of blended into my life. And then I saw what the impact on everything that I put in my body was on my blood sugar. And if anybody's done this, they know what I'm talking about. But the first thing that generally happens is you go, oh, that healthy food that I thought was so healthy is really driving my blood sugar. I used to eat these Fig Newtons and I thought they were so good because they're packaged, you know, so wonderfully healthfully. They looked like they were just going to be great, and they were literally sugar bombs. And by the way,
everything in our life.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people who think that the nature of the agricultural industrial complex is to add sugar and trans fats to everything because that's what humans will, you know, almost addictively consume and then go rush immediately to the store to buy some more. There's a really strong kind of case for that to be made. Anyway, what I found was I was able to very quickly identify four or five behaviors that were good. Taking a little walk after eating a dinner made a big difference, even if I had bread or pasta or something like that, that would be a blood sugar spike. Learning to, you know, eat certain foods in combination. So if you eat eggs and orange juice, the impact of the orange juice is somewhat blunted by the eggs. You always want to eat fiber. The more fiber you consume, the more rapidly sugar can be drawn up in the bloodstream. So all these behaviors were relatively quick learnings and relatively easy to follow along. You know, I did miss those Fig Newtons, but you know, it was relatively straightforward. You're like, oh yeah, that's something I should have won.
Yeah, keeping your eye on the prize, having that why again to why you were putting them down in the first place. I love it. An Oura Ring. He's got a CGM. Is there anything else that you're tracking?
Oh God, so many things. I'm no Brian Johnson, but let's just say I think he's been a really interesting case study on all the things that you possibly could track. And I think, you know, I don't think it's necessary that everybody goes to the lengths that Brian Johnson is going to. I think he's certainly pushing the limits and maybe, you know, showing some inspiration there. But I think, you know, you can get by just thinking about, are you moving enough? Are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating well? And are you making sure that you're managing stress and trying to stay resilient and building social connections around you that are going to, could be conducive to your wellness?
Yeah. For those that aren't in the loop on Brian Johnson, he basically started an endeavor that he aimed to measure, I believe it was 70 plus organs of his body, and then maximally reverse the quantified biological age of each. So this was no small feat, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely insane.
Absolutely insane. And a lot of work too. And I think, right. I'm glad that somebody's doing it. I think there's probably some really interesting science that may come out of that. Certainly for him, it seems to have worked wonders. I don't know if you've looked at a picture of him recently, but
he looks like a teenager.
He looks like a teenager. So, I do think longevity is something that, is really important to people, obviously, but health span is even more important. And I think increasingly we're going to see measures of your health span be made accessible. So back to your question about, like, what other things am I measuring? So, I recently went through all the DNA testing and blood testing that's sort of available to people literally over the counter. You can kind of go to these websites and order, a kit, have it sent to your home, and then you do a tiny little blood sample and put it on a card and mail it away. And, 2 weeks later, they're telling you that your vitamin D is low and your A1C, which is a measure of glycogenated blood, red blood cells in your body, so basically blood sugar, can tell you what that percentage is. And, like, that's amazing because, think about that. You had to get a doctor to give you a reason to go do a blood test. You can just do it yourself. The DNA, talks to you about methylation of your DNA and, like, how is your epigenome changing? And there's all sorts of things that people can test now, from stool samples to mucus to blood to DNA. And frankly, I think early adopters are the people who are using it now to understand themselves. But I think it seems sort of obvious that this will be a mainstream thing for people over time.
Yeah. I think we're only going to keep learning more ways to learn more things about ourselves. And then that information is going to become more accessible than it's ever been previously. So that tees us up as we wind down here. What do you think the future is for wearables, Tom?
Wow, the future of wearables. Well, I think it's bright. I think, as I said, I see a future where everyone makes health a daily practice, and they would support that, with insights and advice. Think of the doctor in your pocket who's looking out for you, maybe, giving you a little nudge here and there, letting you know how you're doing. But I think what we'll see for the future is that I can imagine, a world where everybody has some kind of wearable and some kind of app they're using to keep abreast of that. And that we start to see maybe combinations of sensors or combinations of data. So, we're talking about a CGM and an Oura Ring giving you perspective on metabolic and heart health. Maybe it'll include things like, implantable sensors or skin sensors that are looking at some of the, secretions that your body provides and looking at it on an ongoing basis. I think there's been some very interesting work that's been done in flexible worn sensors in clothing. Difference is we take our clothing off. So, I do think the ring has a real advantage that clothing off as you have to before you go to bed or want to before you go to bed. I think implantables are going to be pretty interesting, ingestibles, particularly for probably very specific need states. So already today, if you get a new joint, it comes a little sensor in the joint, and it sort of monitors for things like inflammation or the function of the joint and, infection and, all those things. They seem pretty far-fetched, but they're actually here today,
Like, it's really wild. I think that a lot of people are going to be walking around chipped, like, in 10 years from now, and that is just going to become commonplace, and that is frightening. Like, even the small things like going, not a wearable, but being able to go to Whole Foods now and they want you to scan your palm to pay. I'm like, I'm going to hold off on that just for now.
yeah, I know what you mean, and yet, as dystopian as being chipped sounds, it seems somewhat inevitable that we will ultimately have interfaces with machines that are there for our benefit, that are going to help us. And I think there's a lot of value in your phone acting as something that knows who you are. I think your ring could know who you are and maybe know in a better way because it's something that you're wearing directly on your body. It's not just something that you point at your face. And you can think about all the use cases there. You know, maybe your ring is what you use to unlock your car or to unlock your computer or your phone or your home or to alert your work that you're there or to, you know, provide access to systems that are highly sensitive. I think there's all sorts of really interesting applications for a persistently worn computer. I mean, even our phones, as much as we carry our phones with us, we don't have them on us all the time.
Yeah. And to an extent, I mean, you're describing a lot of the functionality of like the Apple Watch I wear on my left wrist, right? Like yeah. so many things are paid for, or it's my entry into something, or it's my, you know, so many things just via this wearable. So the question is then like, when does that technology start to transfer into different areas and perhaps even the ring, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think as long as you're in control of it and one of our big beliefs is that you're in control of your own data.
Yeah.
We do not market or share or reveal your data. You know, women's health has been, I think, justly sensitive to the importance of keeping that data encrypted and secure. Absolutely. We want to preserve that and to make sure that like you are the sovereign of your data and you're the sovereign of your identity. And you know, there are plenty of bad people who would love to take your identity.
Not today, everyone. Not today. Well, as we wind down here, my final question for you, Tom. Right now, you talked to us about your hurdle moment before joining the team at Aura, going through a time where you were really struggling with stress, anxiety, not enough sleep. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you offer to yourself then?
You know, I would say keep focused on trying to find balance. Those first few months, actually, I really connected with our Finnish colleagues. Company is half in Finland, who have a really interesting, I think, view on finding balance. And I think maybe my American self is about like trying to get there and go as far and as fast and as quickly as possible. And I think I would have said to my future self or my past self, you know, to learn that balance sooner. And I think it's been a really valuable lesson for me, not just at work or at Aura, but in my life. And it's been a really great lesson. I think, honestly, Aura, the product probably helped me find that too.
I love that. Well, so grateful for your time today, Tom. For those that either want to follow along with you or learn more about Aura, give us the details. How can they do that?
Well, auraring.com, and it's auraring.com, is a great resource for you to learn about it. We have a blog there, which is filled with inspiring stories of customers who have used the product to learn that they were pregnant or to detect that they were sick with COVID or to optimize their health or to learn that they were getting sick, to manage their lives. And a bunch of scientific work is there, information about the product and the company, auraring.com if you want to learn.
Amazing. I'm over on social at Emily Abadi and at Hurdle Podcast. Another hurdle conquered. Catch you guys next time.